Good morning. Welcome to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldine, and this week we're going to talk about insomnia and anxiety. My guest is Karen Kaufman. She is a licensed acupuncturist, also has a PhD in psychology. And you might think, when people think about acupuncture, they think mostly about pain reduction, and it's really good for that. And it has other applications as well. And today we're going to talk about psychological applications of acupuncture, which are also very effective. People come in to have an acupuncture treatment, and they've got their whole day's anxiety. They're amped up. They're stressed out. They get on the table. The needles go in. They relax. Promptly fall asleep often. And can be pretty profoundly relaxing and change your metabolism. So let's talk about that. Karen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I did want to say that even though pain management, we think of just pain management, that a lot of times insomnia and anxiety creep up even during pain management. For example, somebody's in a lot of pain, they can be agitated and have trouble falling asleep, or their pain limits them when they turn over at night and then they wake up. So there can be insomnia there. I see several people who have been in car crashes and are coming in for pain, but they're also coming in for the anxiety associated with the car crash. And some of them even have symptoms of like post-traumatic stress disorder, which is anxiety from reliving the crash. But yes, I do treat people for insomnia and anxiety aside from pain. They can come in and that can be a chief complaint, or it can be maybe not the headliner, but a symptom that they have that they would like to address.
You know, actually, a lot of times people come for pain and they don't even mention their anxiety or their insomnia. You actually have to ask, because they don't even think that's something that anyone, you know, that it's like, it's my private thing. Mm-hmm. And nobody's going to help me with that.
Correct. So I thought maybe we could start, obviously anxiety and insomnia can be really linked together, but I thought we would start with insomnia first. And in honor of the presidential visit to Ireland, I have an Irish proverb that says, a good laugh and a long sleep are the best cures in the doctor's book.
Oh, that's great. And so, isn't that true?
Are you well rested today?
Actually, I had a pretty good sleep.
Good. It's everything.
Right.
So basically, when we're talking about insomnia, we're essentially talking about sleep difficulties. So getting to sleep, staying asleep, mm-hmm. and having refreshing sleep. So there are issues of quality of sleep and quantity of sleep. And people will usually come in when that starts to be a problem. If it's persisted, clinically, if it's persisted for over a month, then it's insomnia. Mm-hmm. And when it's starting to really encroach on people's daily performance or their mood, mm-hmm. that's when people come in and they want to address the issues of insomnia.
You know, sometimes people don't even know they're not sleeping well. You know, it's hard to evaluate that. So if you have a partner, they'll know. If you're mm-hmm. not sleeping well, if you sleep in the same bed with someone, they know if you're sleeping poorly. You might think you're fine and you've become very grouchy during the day. Your partner will ask your partner, am I sleeping okay?
Mm-hmm. Many, many consequences of insomnia. So, of course, fatigue, irritability, but lack of concentration and just decrements in performance, not being able to do things with ease.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, actually, long-term insomnia is associated with much higher risks of heart attack and stroke and
obesity.
And so a lot of health consequences. So it's not just the, we're laughing, that it's not funny.
Absolutely not. So often insomnia is a result of an underlying condition. So you see insomnia a lot with people that are depressed and or people that are anxious. So clinical depression usually has insomnia as one of the main features. People can also, if they have digestive issues, develop insomnia. So if they have like acid reflux or GERD, that can keep them awake. Women in perimenopause or menopause often have insomnia a lot of times due to night sweats and things like that. There's also insomnia that's primary, so that is there's nothing else really going on but a sleep issue, and those are usually things like sleep apnea, restless leg syndrome, things of that nature, which I don't do so much for. It's usually in conjunction with pain or psychological issues.
Oh, that you bring up a ton of ideas. All right, well, you know, I want to ask, are you going to talk more about what insomnia is?
Well, I can talk about what causes it, how we look for it, that sort of thing.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so lots of different causes of anxiety. Some of them are lifestyle. So, for example, you have shift work. So that, you know, you're working the graveyard shift, that will do a number on your sleep. If you're traveling a lot across time zones, those kinds of things. If you have high stress, can't calm down at night, anxiety. So a lot of sympathetic activation, so fight or flight kind of stuff can
really... A boss that's really annoying, family relationships that are difficult.
Medications, and that can be over-the-counter. So it's really a combination of physiology, psychology, and lifestyle that will cause anxiety or cause insomnia to come about.
You know, one of the things is what people eat before bed.
Sure.
I mean, you know, having coffee, having lots of sugar, having stimulants in the evening.
Or heavy protein, even right before bed. So what happens when you're going in to be screened and treated for insomnia is that people usually go in when it's starting to take its toll. And whether it's an allopathic medical professional or somebody like me, we're going to look at the medical history. We're going to look at what kinds of medications you take, what's your lifestyle. What's your issue with sleeping? Are you tossing and turning? Are you having roiling kind of nightmares? Are you just not feeling refreshed, but you think you've slept when you've woken up? So a lot of times, just what you glean from medical history can be enough where you can tinker with things, you know, lifestyle kinds of things, and help people. I often do work with stress reduction, anxiety, so breathing exercises. And if we have time at the end of the show, maybe I'll lead a breathing exercise with everybody.
Sounds good.
Okay. A lot of times you might ask a person, if they're not exactly sure what's wrong, to keep a sleep diary. So, dear diary. No, a sleep diary of what kinds of, you know, when they go to sleep, what they feel like when they've rested, you know, if they wake up during the night. Because a lot of times, as you said before, people don't quite know what they're doing.
So then if you said, okay, I'm going to bed at 10 and then, okay, I actually fell asleep at 11:30. Mm-hmm. Oh, but I was up at 2, that kind of thing.
And then
in the morning I felt exhausted or...
Right.
Okay.
And then there's always the possibility of referring somebody to have polysomnography, which is a sleep study. And so a lot of times I will refer my patients to go get a sleep study if it's possible that they might have sleep apnea. And in sleep apnea, you're waking up a million times during the night where you're stopping breathing. So there's some signs of that, and sometimes people will come in, and or that's one of the things I'll ask them, you know, have you had a sleep study? Do you have a CPAP machine? Those kinds of things. But in general, again, if it's a milder form of insomnia and it's really just related to anxiety and so forth, then normally a sleep study might not be warranted, and we'll just work on lifestyle, and we'll also work on using Chinese medicine, which we can talk about now how Chinese medicine fits in.
But before we do, I want to talk a little bit about the overuse of sleep studies. I think there's a whole industry that's sprouted up with the whole area that's now called sleep medicine that is resulting in, you know, a multi million, maybe billion, I don't know, industry of evaluation and treatment that may or may not be effective, helpful, but certainly generates a lot of money for the companies that evaluate people, have those sleep centers, and sell equipment, whether it's CPAPs or mouth guards. That stuff certainly helps some people tremendously and probably saves some lives. And for some people, it may just be very expensive evaluation and not necessary at all.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people that really do need one, they're at that point where they're desperate, too. A lot of people don't want to do a sleep study because it involves going somewhere and spending the night and being fitted with, EEG apparatus. And people, it just sounds either creepy or scary. But when you need to have one, I think it's great. And so there are instances mm-hmm. where I will refer people to do that.
Oh, me too. And there also are home sleep studies,
right?
Where you can actually take the equipment home. It's not quite as involved, but you get a lot of information.
You do.
You know, there are at least four sets of leads on that. Let's take a break. We come back, we'll talk more. This is To Your Health. I'm Ann Goldine, and I'm with licensed acupuncturist Karen Kaufman. You are listening to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldine, and I'm with Karen Kaufman. She is a licensed acupuncturist and also has a PhD in psychology. And we're talking about insomnia. So we've kind of been talking about the Western way of thinking about insomnia. And of course, now let's change hats and put on your Eastern way of thinking about it. And let's talk about that.
Okay. What kind of a hat should I wear for that?
I don't know. Something pretty. Oh, maybe that dragon or that lion head.
All right. Consider it done.
Okay.
So a lot of times people have probably heard that in Chinese medicine, you've heard words bandied about like yin and yang and balance and flow of energy and all those kinds of things. So I want to touch on some of that and give you some insight into how we view insomnia. So good sleep involves balance within the body. And on the most fundamental level, we can talk about yin and yang. And those are opposites, but they're very interdependent on one another, and they transform into one another. So yin principles are yin is the resting quality, cooling. It comes at night. It's associated with darkness and being deep and down and all of those kinds of attributes of yin. And of course, they have to be in relationship to yang. And yang is the more active, associated with day and light and movement upward and outward and heating and superficial. And so all those kinds of things, just in opposite of yin. So when you think about your day and going to sleep at night, you're transferring from more of a yang energy, which is the, enlivening energy, to more of a yin energy at night. So at night, yin is supposed to predominate, and the yang must take a back seat and transform. And so it needs to retreat deep and low. So if it stays upward and outward in the brain and eyes, then you stay awake. So we want to be mindful of there being too much yang and not enough yin, and we want to bring the yang energy down. And so, and if you think about that, when you go to bed at night and you can't sleep and you're all keyed up and everything's in your head and everything is just battering around in your skull and it's all up high. And that's true with stress too. A lot of times we carry that up high, and my job is to bring the yang energy down and to also try to increase the yin energy.
So does deep, like some slow breathing, does that do that? Is that one of the things that brings the yang down?
Well, that's one way to look at it. Deep, slow, I always look at the deep, slow breathing as in a more Western way, that we're trying to go from fight or flight to rest and digest and get the parasympathetic activation going. So I'm kind of a hybrid of both of these. Another kind of metaphor to think about is our mental activity and consciousness in Chinese medicine, we call it the shen or the spirit. And at night, we need to house the spirit in the yin or the blood. So all day long, your consciousness and your mental activity is floating upward and outward, and you're going about your day, and you're speaking, and you're thinking, and you're doing all of these things, and you're out there in the world. Well, at night, you need to kind of bring that down and have the shen rest in the blood. So, and again, that's just a metaphor for it. If there's not ample blood to support the shen at night, then the shen wanders upward again into the mind. So organs that generate, store, and circulate blood might be out of balance. So we want to have a lot of blood. And in a way, I'm speaking of it metaphorically, but also literally too.
Which are the organs that in Chinese medicine deal with blood?
Okay, so that would be the spleen, which generates the blood in Chinese medicine, the liver, which stores and circulates the blood, and the heart, which is also responsible for circulating the blood. And metaphorically, too, the shen is thought to reside in the heart at night. So in Chinese medicine, we don't talk that much about the brain. We talk about these other energetic systems, which I find very interesting, being from a psychology tradition. So it's very interesting to me. So at night, then, you know, your consciousness is supposed to come on down and reside in the heart and kind of be cool and moistened and calm and all of those kinds of things. And so we try to do things to engender that. And then the last issue, and again, these are really just in a nutshell, but just to give you a flavor for it, the last issue is something that we call the Chinese clock. And we have 12 energetic systems, and each one's active for a 2-hour slice of the 24-hour pie. So if you think of 24 hours on a pie chart, then each 2 hours, the energy peaks in a different system, and so they all circulate from one channel to the next. And so, for example, you probably see this too, that people that tell you, oh, I don't get enough sleep, and you delve into that, and they say, no, I'm fine, and then I wake up just in the middle of the night, and I'll always say, you know, your eyes just slam open, and there you are. And they say, yeah. And I'm thinking about what time that's going to happen. And then they say, it's usually around 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. And so that's the time when liver energy is at its peak, okay? And when you think of liver energy, the liver is responsible for smooth flow of blood and energy. And that can be impeded very much so by lots of stress. So people that have stress during the day, sometimes they'll do okay and then they wake up at 3 a.m. Or the liver is responsible for anger. That's the emotion associated with it. So unresolved issues of anger, frustration, things like that sometimes can manifest by a 3 a.m. awakening.
Okay, so we probably have a lot of people that are hearing this, a lot of people in the world who are probably awake at 3 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of anger in this world.
So sometimes people wake up at 5 a.m., and that's really not long enough. They've gone to bed later. And 5 a.m., the lungs are more active. And so at 5 a.m., the lungs are associated with grief. So sometimes you find people that are grieving or have some sort of unresolved grief will pop open then. And another thing, you had touched on this about people overeating at night. Well, the systems that govern most of digestion are strongest between 7 and 11 a.m. in the morning. So the very opposite side of the clock is 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. at night. And that's sometimes when people really will stuff themselves.
Right.
And that's opposite when that energy is the strongest.
Oh.
So we want to try to not have that happen.
What about at 1 o'clock? A lot of people report that they're awake at 1. What's going on then?
Oh, no. Now you're let me see. 1 to 3 is the liver, so it's just starting the liver. So it's kind of that piece between 1 and 3 where you see a lot of that. So should we jump and talk about treatments?
Yeah, let's.
Okay, so as a Western practitioner would do, I'm going to take a detailed intake. Specifics about sleep and those kinds of things. You know, I'll get really detailed about that. You know, what time of night do you wake up? What time do you go to bed? What's what's an adequate amount of sleep for you? Because one thing we do know is people need different amounts. Like how much sleep do you need a night to?
At least 8.
Yeah, me too. Otherwise, I'm off. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Some people nap and they're refreshed. Some people can't nap at all. So there's a lot of variability in that, but there are commonalities. So I'll ask about, you know, do you dream? What kind of dreams do you have? Do you have trouble falling asleep? Those are the main ones. Do you have trouble falling asleep? Do you have trouble maintaining your sleep? Do you wake up easy? Do you not sleep deeply? And then we talked about the specific time of the night that you might wake up. What are things that co-occur with that? So night sweats will wake people up.
Mm-hmm.
So things like that.
Or bad dreams.
So a lot of these really point to a certain pattern or imbalance. So nightmares are said to be gallbladder energetic heat affecting the heart. And so if I'm going to start going down that road, then I'll ask about other symptoms that would go with that. So with the gallbladder heat, there'd probably be a bitter taste in the mouth, maybe some redness around the outer eyes, a little bit of agitation, those kinds of things. Sometimes people have repetitive dreams that are just kind of boring and mundane or kind of almost OCD kind of dreams. And those usually represent a spleen-heart imbalance. The spleen is responsible for thinking, and overthinking tends to be an imbalance, and that can follow you into your dreams. So the other thing I'll look for in spleen-heart imbalance is, are they overthinking? Do they have poor concentration? Can they be kind of listless during the day? You know, somebody just burned up all their concentration by, like, studying. They're studying for boards or something. A lot of times they can come up with that then. Trouble falling asleep, a lot of times it's just stress. It's the liver. You know, we want to kind of calm that down. Waking up easily. Night sweats can be usually a kidney-heart imbalance because we want the heart to be nice and moist and cool and all that kind of stuff. And usually the kidney will provide the coolant for that. And a lot of times that's the kidney needs to be boosted because it's not doing that. And then you have night sweats and you'll have agitation, things of that nature. So I'm looking at all of that stuff in my intakes with people. And then I'm going to do acupuncture usually, tailored to what kind of a pattern they have, what kind of a syndrome I see going on. But there's also empirical points that we kind of use across the board. I mean, we always say we tailor it to the individual treatment, but the truth is there are some commonalities across insomnia that we work with, and there are some points that we have learned work. Just, I did one point on my husband one time when he couldn't fall asleep, and it pretty much was almost like a tranquilizer dart gun. It just kind of put him down. Hey, there's an idea.
That's great.
I will probably also, depending on what the imbalance is, prescribe some herbs.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes when we're talking about the energy being up high and kind of agitating up there at the top, sometimes we'll give heavy sedating herbs. So they're heavier. They're actually made out of minerals to try to pull that down, or maybe some herbs to moisten things. So we've got proper coolant going.
Let's go back to the the needles, the
needles
acupuncture
themselves.
Part of the acupuncture.
Okay.
Yeah. They could be anywhere. Right? You could put them anywhere?
Mm-hmm.
And they stay in for a while? I mean,
usually,
you don't just put them in and take them out.
Not unless it's a child. Then you usually take it out.
Uh-huh.
Usually 20 minutes or so. Sometimes longer. Sometimes shorter if somebody's really kind of weakened.
And what's the deal with, like spinning the needles or moving them around
once
they're in?
Manipulating the needles is you're trying to engage the needle in the energetic meridian and bring about a chi sensation. So that might be energy spreading, energy moving, a little bit of almost like a tickle energetically. So trying to make sure you've really made access to what you need access to.
Mm-hmm. And how does it, like you have a needle here, whatever, you have a needle in this liver point, and you have a needle in this kidney point and heart point.
Mm-hmm.
That's supposed to move energy around? How does that do that?
You know what? We're really not too sure about that. And when my patients ask me how acupuncture works, I always say, do you want the Western explanation or the Eastern explanation? So what's it going to be?
Let's have the Eastern.
Oh, okay. Well, what we're trying to do is get energy to move smoothly through the body and through all of these energetic highways. And there can be blockages. There can be not enough energy coming down the highway. It can be blocked. There can be too much going somewhere. There can be heat that develops in these pathways that we want to clear out. People can be too cold. So it's really, you do the gardening show too. It's really like a garden. You want to have the proper light and dark, so the yin and yang, heat and cold, again, yin and yang, moistness, dryness, yin and yang.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of stuff. We're looking for balance. But the way the needles actually bring that about, it's anybody's guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I did want to just point out that there was a study done and published in 2004 looking at people who had anxiety disorders, which I know we didn't get much into today, but we can do that next time.
Okay.
And insomnia, and they were given 5 weeks of acupuncture treatment. And normally you think, oh, well, they're just reporting they're sleeping better. You know, it's maybe a placebo effect. But they looked at melatonin secretion at night. So melatonin is like a sleep chemical that the pineal gland secretes. And when it gets dark, it should be secreting more. And they also did sleep study, a polysomnography on these folks, and found that after 5 weeks of acupuncture treatment, their self-report said, yeah, we are sleeping better, but also that the melatonin secretion at night increased. And according to the polysomnography, there was better sleep quality. They fell asleep faster. They were less restless during the night. All of those kinds of things that suggested that on a physiological level. So there is something happening.
So if a person's having trouble with sleeping and they want to have acupuncture to help it, what should they expect? Like, you know, a month? What, this study was for how long?
This was 5 weeks of treatment.
Uh-huh. Did they have like one treatment a week?
I think they had two a week.
Two a week? Uh-huh.
Generally, what I tell people is and actually when people don't even come in for sleep or anything like that, they usually will say, I slept so good that first night. So usually there'll be some benefit from the first treatment, but usually what I say is a series of 5 to 6 treatments, and then we'll reevaluate and see what we need to do from there. But if you're not getting anything by that amount, then you probably need to take a different tack.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense. I mean, everything you have to try and see what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly acupuncture is profoundly relaxing to me. I fall asleep on the table and I sleep better then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I'd like to touch on anxiety a little bit.
Okay.
Anxiety seems to affect people profoundly in the day, and it affects their sleep.
Sure.
So there's an overlap there.
Sure.
And one of the things that I found really is helpful for that is activity, exercise. Sure. And I don't know exactly, but Dr. Rady would say it increases your brain chemicals that are they make your brain work better so you can process things better and maybe the anxiety goes away or maybe you get a different perspective on the anxiety.
Mm-hmm. And I always, talk to people about exercise when they have insomnia or anxiety, to try to get that going on. Again, going back to insomnia, if you exercise too close to bedtime, that can be a problem.
Uh-huh. Too much. Yeah, too much. Okay. Well, we have to keep everything in balance.
Yeah.
Right. Exercising earlier in the day.
Right.
Yeah, Rady says he thinks people should exercise first thing in the day. But for a lot of people,
that's not possible, or they're not morning people.
Right. They're not ready for that kind of morning activity. Well, thank you very much for coming in, Karen.
You're welcome. And we can we can do a whole show on anxiety next time.
I think that would be great. Yeah, maybe in the fall when people are starting to feel that way. My guest has been Karen Kaufman. She is a licensed acupuncturist with a practice in Astoria. She also has a PhD in psychology. I'm Ann Goldin. You've been listening to Your Health. Next week, Chuck Myers and others will be here. He's a master gardener, and Digging the Dirt will take a tour of the upcoming June 5th community garden tour. That should be a blast.